Welcome to Knowledge on the Go, the podcast brought to you by the PI programs team at Vizient. I'm Courtney Furr-White, Senior Performance Improvement Program Director at Vizient, and your host for today's episode. Hospital-acquired infections are acquired during a patient's stay in a healthcare facility. These infections can be caused by a variety of pathogens, including bacteria, viruses, fungi, and parasites. They can lead to increased morbidity, mortality, and healthcare cost. Joining me from SSM Health are Dr. Shefali Wolf, System Vice President of Quality and Safety, Chief Quality Officer, and Chris Zirgis, System Director of Infection Prevention. I'm so happy to have you here. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Dr. Wolf, why don't you start us off with an overview of SSM Health and what led to this initiative for hospital-acquired infections improvements?
Please call me Shefali. I'll start by telling you a little bit about SSM Health. We became an integrated health delivery system in 2018 when our new CEO, Laura Kaiser, joined the organization. And prior to 2018, we were really a collection of various hospitals that all had their own approach to regulatory infection prevention, patient safety, and quality. At that point, all of our hospitals were paying penalties in some capacity to Centers for Medicare Services through their value-based purchasing contracts because their standard infection ratio was greater than one. Our team, System ID, came together during COVID and is a composite of four different teams. It's the infectious diseases physicians from across the organization, infection prevention, the team that Chris leads, microbiology, and our stewardship infectious diseases pharmacists. We started to reflect on work that we could continue to do together as a team that would improve patient safety and quality through the lens of infectious diseases and infection prevention. Given the opportunity that we know we had across the organization in preventing hospital-acquired infections, that felt like an appropriate place to start. We really started that work in 2020, looking at three main infection types: catheter-associated urinary tract infections, central line-associated bloodstream infections, and hospital-onset C. difficile infection. To do that work, we pulled together a wide group of subject matter experts or stakeholders to really understand evidence-based practice guidelines. What should we be doing as an organization to prevent these infections for our patients? And that group of stakeholders included our four teams, but also the critical care physicians, emergency medicine, hospitalists, nurse practice, environmental services, a wide group of people. And once that wide stakeholder group had aligned on what those best practice guidelines should be, we partnered with our continuous improvement team to collate all of those guidelines into a change package. We call that reduction guides. And we then partnered with our point of care teams to deliver this change package and then walk with them to understand variation in practice and to narrow the gap in that variation. And that work collectively over a span of 2 years has led to a 60% reduction in those three infection types.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of great work. Did you face implementation challenges?
We did. Anytime teams are focused on improvement, there's a natural tension between provider autonomy and standardization. As we're looking to improve quality, there is a degree of standardization that needs to happen in practice. As an example, part of our strategy to reduce hospital onset C. difficile was to standardize the way we test for C. difficile across the organization. Prior to this work, we had different ways of testing in all of our different markets. Coming together on one set of testing criteria was a change not only for our lab team, but it was also a change for our provider teams who were used to testing in a certain way, seeing the results in a certain way. Providers do feel like they've lost part of their autonomy in how they practice. Anytime we do improvement work, there is natural tension between standardization to improve quality and provider autonomy that we have to navigate.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, an important thing within the quality world is the structure and process outcome. Looking at the structure piece, we began centralizing many infection prevention functions at the system level. And there are different models of infection prevention out there. Some are hybrid, some are totally decentralized model. In 2019, we centralized all the HAI data at the system level. So there was one repository of that data. There was one NHSN administrator. That also led to some standardization of work. And especially when it looked at the reduction guide, this all became a central focus with what is that evidence-based practice? What does the literature say? That became that centralization of many of these initiatives were supported at a centralized infection prevention department. In addition to that, many of our key partners are also centralized in that area. What is that process of work? We had a standard process for reporting out HAI numbers. the HAI numbers hit the leader's email across the system on the same date. All the reports look the same. There's some expectation in these processes of data and also with our partners. Not only are leaders receiving the data for continuous improvement, our nursing partners, everyone is receiving the data and the recommendations in the same format, same function. So the structure supports standard processes of work, and that did contribute to the outcomes that we're talking about. In addition to that, you do need a change framework. You're asking many individuals, and I mean many, it's not just a handful, to change the way that they work, maybe to change their ordering practices. Maybe it's changing a workflow. We at Infection Prevention really grounded ourselves in a change framework, which many nursing colleagues are familiar with. It's Lewin's change theory. And quite simply, you're unfreezing behaviors. And it's not easy. And it took a couple of years. You're unfreezing beliefs, practices, change in workflow. It's beyond just the why. You want to really work through the process of change. What are we changing to? What's the new work going to look like? What are we going to freeze as that new work? And that is really what the reduction guides outlined. In addition to infection prevention, we're going through a thunderstorm now. We're unfreezing this, but this is the change. And once these practices were in place, how do you freeze them? And we're still in that phase right now. This week, there was an uptick in some infections and a little panic ensues. And you have to step back and say, let's go back to basics. Go back to the guides, take a deep breath, and go back to what our new workflow is. Having a change framework, but also understanding what your structure and process and outcome is, how you do business, is very important to make that vision successful.
We know it's important to monitor for variation and sustainment. What do you do if you see something slipping or reverting back?
I truly believe you have to build in process checks into work because remember, you're trying to freeze new behavior. Those providers, you're trying to freeze a different way. Maybe they're ordering a different type of test, or maybe there's an approval process that has to ensue to order certain laboratory testing to have that stewardship in place. So process checks just to make sure, hey, this is our new work. Are we indeed following that new work, or are we having some practices that might be reverting back to the old model? Having that process check is very important to support that sustainment. The second item I will mention is pulling the team together. Nobody is in this alone. We have to appreciate it's a team sport. It's not just nursing responsible for this. It's not just infection prevention. It's not just our providers. So we have to pull together a multidisciplinary team to really work together and understand this is the fallouts we might be having. These are the opportunities we are having. Let's pull a team together and talk about this. And that's part of that structure that's built into the model. We have a way of doing business with these. And we call these safety huddles, or we also have KPI teams in our regions that do this. What is our structure to pull the team together? What is the processes that we have in place to pull them together? And then really course correct. Those two items were very important for us to get to this freeze part, but to continue to monitor that because we're not out of the woods yet. And many of those infections are on our watch measure list. This is making some of us a little bit nervous because they have been high priority KPIs for years, but we've been so successful that we moved them to a watch list. And it really is making people a little nervous. But part of that change work was having a control plan in place. We have the science, the evidence, we have the tools, we have the teams. We really need to utilize that and operate in that new world practice that we froze.
I agree and support that 100%. So much of this work required a cultural change. Our teams needed to understand that these infections truly are preventable. Now that they see that, because so many of our ministries have had zero infections for a number of months, some of them years now, part of the sustainment plan is ensuring that the visibility of these infections is really part of daily work, that we're reporting out on patients who have indwelling catheters, indwelling central lines during daily huddle on the unit, during safety huddle across the hospital, both at 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. We're addressing the source of lines, why we're getting cultures, why we're doing C. difficile testing as a group of providers. That daily practice is what will contribute to sustainment.
I really like that freeze and unfreezing for change management. Both of you just highlighted how important it is to come together as a team. I know you did a lot of training at the beginning, but we know that there's always going to be turnover. What training do you have for new hires? And is there any mandatory training for current staff?
Like many organizations, we're all currently in this space where we have turnover that we have to consider. We have grounded ourselves in working with our partners, particularly nursing, which is the largest workforce. And many of those infections that we mentioned, the point of care practices are where it begins. We work very closely with nursing because they do have a model of where they evaluate their competencies every year. Existing employees, we have this competency approach with nursing that we have in place. The same with IPs and other key partners is that we have talking points, fact sheets, modules to support annual training, just to keep it current. And if there's any updates, periodically we'll review those evidence-based bundles just to make sure nothing has changed in the literature. That's for the annual or existing employee, and that's the standardization of tools. Going back to that central model for infection prevention, we often are the authors of those tools, and we have version control and edits that we make sure that there's consistency in the message and that the appropriate references are there or the appropriate vetting has occurred. Let's talk a little bit about onboarding. With the influx of newer employees, we've worked that into our LMS module. For example, our educational partners will reach out to infection prevention or other key stakeholders. Here are our modules. Do you want to update the content? What things do you need to consider? Part of that onboarding piece and then the annual updates for our teams occurs through a very methodical process just to make sure that education is there.
I'm sure there's some strategies that you're working on right now. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about what's currently on your strategy plan.
We have seen improvements in CAUTI, CLABSI, and C. diff, and that allowed our team a little bit of capacity to think bigger. Last year, we started work on improving surgical safety through the lens of reducing surgical site infections, really focused on colon and hysterectomy. Colon surgeries, of course, are our biggest risk for patients, sometimes the most complicated surgeries we do. As an organization, focusing on surgical site infection prevention really had not been something that we had undertaken. It was a new infection type for us. That work started the way we do most of our improvement work. A review of what does the evidence or best practice guidelines say our teams have to do to prevent these infections. Our focus was really on standardizing 5 process measures: approach to skin decolonization, surgical site preparation, antibiotic prophylaxis, maintaining normothermia, maintaining euglycemia. Surgery is complicated. There are lots of different players involved: anesthesia, the various surgical specialties, pharmacy, diabetes educators, lots of different people that touch patients who go through surgery. So our stakeholder group was bigger and more diverse than it probably was with the other 3 infection types. But the work of last year was really on aligning around best practice recommendations focused on those 5 process measures, collating all of that information, and then partnering with the teams to understand variation in surgical practice. We're very much in that phase of the work is managing variation. If we want the teams to focus on glycemic management, every OR is going to need a glucometer in order to measure patients' blood sugars. And if we want all of our patients to be started on an IV insulin drip to manage their blood sugars, every OR needs insulin pumps. Some of that variation in people and process and equipment is what we're working through now.
We're working with a wide variety of different types of clinicians. For example, nurses respond differently than physicians would. Also, part of this journey is with any of these initiatives, it's taking the evidence or recommendations that are well vetted, but the application becomes very important. With some of the SSI strategies, for example, nurse anesthetists or anesthesiologists will respond differently. We always have to consider that. It's the application piece. What we've learned is with skin antisepsis and decolonization, there's different settings of care. One of the issues, I don't even want to say it's an issue, it's really a great opportunity, is our ambulatory surgery centers. Their processes are a little bit different. And so those infection preventionists in that space brought up that the way the recommendations are written may not translate into our setting. How do we conform these to this setting? And that's a fair question. The practice is there, but being cognizant that the way individuals work or their specialty or even the practice setting, you might have to apply it a little bit differently. And you really have to work with those individuals to understand the goal's the same, but the application or that journey may look a little bit differently.
That's a really good point, Chris. One of the things that we've learned is that as we are thinking about the implementation of evidence-based practice, we've realized that we need different processes for patients that are entering care in different ways. So the process might look different for a patient who's coming in for an elective scheduled procedure. It will look different for patients who come in for an emergent procedure. It'll look different for patients who are already admitted and need surgery. So they're coming from the floor down to the OR. And we're learning through implementation that all of these processes are different, and we're helping the teams create workflows that make sense for the patient journey. And that's, for our team, an important learning related to surgical site infection prevention.
What advice would you give to your peers that are also focusing on this improvement work?
We certainly had a lot of lessons along the way. One of the key lessons for me personally has been, as we think about expertise, there's really multiple layers of expertise. There's the subject matter experts that within our organization have largely been centralized, and they bring a tremendous amount of information and knowledge to the table. But we also have expertise in our point of care teams. They're the ones that do the work every day. And so as we're thinking about improvement, ensuring that their voices around, does this process improvement plan really make sense with your workflow, and help us think about which parts of the patient journey we're not thinking about, including all of those voices as true experts at the table, has been hugely helpful for us.
I heard a quote recently a colleague shared with me, and it's, slow is smooth and smooth is fast. I actually think that came from the military. So I thought, what does that really mean? Really, when I looked at it a little bit more, it makes perfect sense. Not everything is a rush job. Slow is smooth is take all those points into consideration when developing recommendations. It's almost using the Lean Sigma term, perform the Gemba. So slow is smooth is to take all that in so that you can design the application purposely for that workflow. And smooth is fast is meaning you have a good product. It may work 85% of the time, knowing that you may have to make some adjustments for different settings. Sitting back and understanding, how do we look at this evidence? Let's take the different practice settings into consideration, get that feedback, and design our product to what we believe is the best solution we have at this time, and provide the appropriate tools. We often say, what is the why for change? I think it's really important to understand we are unfreezing or changing work for very busy clinicians in their workspace. While the why is important, is helping them understand the vision. Where are we going? What does this change look like? Help me understand what that workflow is going to look like. Get their input so that when you're developing that new work, your freeze part of that change model makes some sense to them, and you have buy-in, and you will create some champions.
You guys have done great and amazing work. I really like that last part, Chris, about why for change and the vision, and making sure that you're sharing that clarity with everyone helps them to get on board, especially when you're trying to move the needle and make some of those improvement efforts. Well, that's all the time we have today for this edition of Knowledge on the Go. Thank you, Shefali and Chris, for joining me. And thank you to our listeners for taking time to join us. And please be sure to look out for future Knowledge on the Go podcasts. Subscribe today, like us, and send us your comments at PI Collaboratives@VizientInc.com. For Vizient's PI Programs team, I'm Courtney Furrow-White.